Welcome to RCR Talk here with Marie. Time for joining me now. I know it's your favourite part of the week. And I'm talking about you, Marty, of course. Marty Gibson is joining me for Media Matters. How are you, Marty?
I'm good. Yep. No. Doing good. Sunny day. Good to be here.
Chicken's good.
Yeah, they're laying up a storm.
Oh, there you go.
You really should think about getting chickens. If you eat eggs, they're such a good part of a garden. You know, you sort of just got that little bit of cycling waste. I'd like to get some fish, you know, and in a cycle with growing lettuce. That fascinates me. But I don't eat that much lettuce now, so I guess I could feed it to my chicken.
Well, there you go. Life is good. Now, we had a good look at a few stories over the weekend. We're going to touch on a few of them. But first up, since we're doing the fun stuff that we like to do, both you and I did it this week. So you did a snapshot of some top stories. I've done a snapshot of some top stories. So you hit me with yours first.
Well, I basically copied you and looked at stuff's top 10 stories. Airline says sorry after seating a recently deceased passenger next to traumatised travellers. Minister seeking answers after COVID inquiry hit by top-level resignations. Dashcam captures the moment of deadly highway collapse in South Korea. Calculated deceitful office worker stole $522,000, ruining family business. Handling a scandal, did Chris Hipkins do things differently? Popular Hamilton bar bans 18-year-olds from Saturday nights after costly damage. Four people injured in jet boat incident at Queenstown Skipper's Canyon. Medical mysteries, her maddening cough had an unexpected deadly cause. Now, I read that.
Oh.
And it's an American story. And it's written, it sort of teases it right out, and turned out that, you know, she had a heart problem.
Right.
And it, yeah.
Talk about burying the lead.
Well, yeah, it was right at the end. I was sort of, you know, talking about the American health system obliquely. Tenant wins payout after eviction during heated argument over bins.
Right.
That's number nine.
Yeah, number nine.
And Married at First Sight Australia 2025, a shocking ultimatum sees one person walk out.
Oh, stop it. You've got to have some maths in there, don't you? Well, I went down to actually the editor's picks because, I mean, let's face it, the editor, you actually have some news in there, right, for your top 10. I thought, well, let's see what the editor's picking because, I mean, let's face it, they're supposed to be the one with the finger on the news. Well, of course, they did have the airline say sorry after seating two passengers next to a recently deceased person, which I thought was, you know. There were two quizzes this week, the morning quiz and then the hard word quiz. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Watch live Treaty Principal Bill submissions. All Black legend makes rugby return in France at age 42. Ooh, there we go. Why didn't we stress it out? Video of Hut Boy's gentle rescue of brown trout goes viral. Marlon Williams to release album and Tereo collaborates with Lord. And $11,000 for the cancelled Great Walk. Kiwi travellers rack up big insurance bills. Okay, thanks, Stuff.
It's one big burying the lead, isn't it?
Oh, my Lord. My Lordy, Lordy, Lordy. So then I actually did purchase a newspaper over the weekend. And as I said to you, I've sort of got a couple of sort of broad headlines that I picked up from it. The first one I think that we should tackle in, because there's a whole bunch of stuff that will come under this, and I just entitled it Embattled Luxon. You did an absolute cracking daily brief on Monday around this. So talk us through that and some of your observations of how the media have been looking at dear Christopher this week.
Yeah, well, I'm loath to be mean. I think sometimes if you feel powerless, you can dehumanize people. And I think that's a major part of our problem is, you know, we like to think about things in terms of good and evil, where we're good. I like to think about things in a more Eastern way. I like to think about things as being out of balance, and that's I think a better way to look at things. So I think we're out of balance with the corporate way of looking at things, and I'm not sure if everyone just reading some of the responses to that column. I mean, I started out by saying, you know, there's a lot of good things about people like Christopher Luxon. You know, that they're people you want in the mix if you're running a nation, because they work like anything. You know, there's always talk about him and his various roles, how he was there before everyone and, you know, just worked. But they need direction from someone who's more creative, because creativity gets weeded out of the corporate world at fairly low levels. As speaking as someone who got weeded out, because I'd sort of start seeing these people and thinking, man, I don't want to be that guy when I'm his age. And it was really difficult to see someone who had some spark. You know, it's very easy with the perks. You get a, well, I mean, speaking as a man, you get a girlfriend who likes the prestige that comes with a job, where everyone says, oh, that's, wow, you've got that job. You're flying to, you know, I was in my early 20s, I was flying all over Southeast Asia and had a laptop and a company car. I thought I was very clever. And I sort of slowly felt the rope tightening around me, you know, realizing, you know, it's going to get harder and harder to step out of this. And so Chris Luxon isn't that much older than me. He just didn't step out of it. But, you know, someone, I was sitting in a hot tub in Sydney once, and someone told me the way my life was going to be. And I just, at that point, just thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Do you know what the realization for me was? It says, you know, I did a number of years working within the brewing industry, and there are not a lot of women, especially through the 90s and the back end of the 90s and early 2000s when I was there, early 2000s actually. And yeah, so women were fairly thin on the ground, and they were often in roles that were stereotypical, let's say.
And it was selected, you know, people who didn't mind getting the odd slap on the ass and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You certainly had to have, let's put it this way, a certain number of women that would work in political offices that are, you know, don't like to have me touch on the arm, or someone said hurty words. I would not have coped in their brewing environment in those days, for sure. I remember just going to these conferences or these meetings, you know, and seeing the ones who had been there for decades, either men or women, and looking down that tunnel of a future.
Do I
want
to be that purple in the nose?
Yeah, well, yeah, that, well, but also too, just the cynicism that was had, and what you actually had to resign yourself in terms of doing and being, and in order to basically GSD, get shit done. And I kind of thought, I don't know whether this is going to be me long term. So I fully get it. And Christopher Luxon, you know who was a cheerleader for him this week that I wasn't expecting, was Fran O'Sullivan.
No, right, I didn't catch that. But
you didn't catch that. I'll just briefly, I wasn't expecting it. So did you read Thomas Coughlin as well?
I did read one of his earlier ones, but which one are you talking about?
The Saturday, but Fran O'Sullivan. So, because of course, if you spend time on X, you'll know that the knives are out for Luxon. Mm. I know Cam is really going for him. If you actually haven't caught what the big fella's been up to, he's been having some fun with Grok this week, doing political roasts, which are absolutely hysterically funny. But anyway, I digress. Fran O'Sullivan. Her opinion piece, Saturday Herald, don't be too quick to call Luxon's demise. And it's quite nice, like she's pulling a little bit of balance back, because of course I think it's an easy target to say, look, we've all said it, he doesn't give the girls the tingles, he gives them the ick. He's fixated on some areas which he needs to get unfixated on. But as you said, he's diligent. Yeah. And not dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, the main target of my blame was National Party's board, because what you're seeing in them, as far as I can tell, for the most part, or for a lot of the part, is this kind of an inversion layer, where they're not the entrepreneurs who start companies. I mean, the chairman of the National Party board, help me out, what's her name? Sylvia.
Oh, no, don't know.
Not Sylvia Plath.
No, lost interest. I lost interest when Michelle left.
She owns an HR company. So that's the layer you'd normally find underneath the CEO.
Yeah.
Like what we need on top of it, and this is how, you know, obviously how it closed the bit, you need people who are braver and more creative over the top of him, giving him some marching orders, because he's good once he's got those. He can go, but if you ask him anything that's outside of the shareholder value, he immediately starts talking in those Ricky Gervais cliches that I had.
And a classic case in point, honestly, your brief was so perfectly timed, because then on Tuesday he went on with Hosking and he did, I mean, it was almost like, crikey, he did a classic David Brent when he was questioned about the whole Bailey incident, and he just spoke around in circles, and it was just a 3-minute disaster zone.
It's a bit like when you've got a kid who knows, you know, they're lying, but they're thinking, figuring, well, I might as well stick with it. He knew that he was obfuscating, and it's just like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. And you know, one of the things that I should have mentioned in that column as well, which I sort of narrowly left out, one of his most bothersome ticks for me, and I feel this way whenever someone says it, is when you start a sentence by saying, look, I'll be honest. Like, is that an exception? Are you making an exception? I normally talk bullshit, but just for a minute, I'll be honest with you. Look, I'll be honest with you. It's kind of like,
The other one too is they asked him about, now what was it, Marsden Point, I think, and it was just before the report went out, and he literally went beet red, like beet red.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of flubbed, and it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah, I mean, you can climb the corporate hierarchy by being a good boy and just, you know, having that as your compass, which is a poor substitute for God, I have to say. You know, what do good boys do? Because, you know, there's any number of older men who get themselves into trouble because they've grown up in a time where, you know, good boys understand, of course, that, you know, Jesus doesn't love them queers. They get a camera in their face and it's all over. But yeah, good boys believe in climate change, and there's no place in this century for climate deniers. What do you like about the Treaty Principles Bill? Because nothing. Well, what don't you like? Everything. It's because good boys think that. And I think, the whole thing of him being a Christian, I think it's kind of, okay, well, I'll put that hat on. I believe this. I'm a good boy. I don't think he's done the shadow work to really know in his heart, you know, what truly is wrong. And so the way he gets over that is just by being, and I mean, all those things I described at the opening are actual phrases he used. We're laser focused on economic growth. We're fixated on carbon zero by 2050. And if you actually look at what being fixated is, it's being out of balance and irrationally thinking someone, but something. But, you know, his board's told him that he's going to execute it. He doesn't have the extra computing power to use on those pesky moral navel-gazing questions.
You know how we spoke when we first started this show way back? Feels like forever now. It's nearly 2 years. Way, way, way back when. We talked about the weaponized kindness of dear leader Jacinda Ardern. In a way, he's got misplaced goodness, Christopher Luxon, hasn't he? He's sort of like as you said, he has this idea of what is good and great. And he's, in a way, he's almost too like that kid, you know, when you're in a social setting with a whole bunch of teenage boys. And he's the boy that your mother has told you you had to invite along because he's a good boy. And if you didn't invite him, no one would invite him to the party. So you invite him to the party and he stands there sort of with a goofy grin on his face, you know, awkwardly trying to make conversation. And, you know, he's the one that, would you like some help putting out the sausage rolls? And he's that guy, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know, we can expand on this. The guys who make it to the top often really, really resent that they didn't get as much admiration from women as they felt was their due. And so once they make it to the top of the ladder, they surround themselves with agreeable women, HR ladies, PR ladies, PA ladies.
Nicola Willis.
Yeah, Nicola Willis, Gareth off The Office. And so they finally have someone worshipfully looking at them while they're laying out their vision. And they lay out their vision and the PR ladies read it back to them. Okay, here, we've PR massaged it, but here it is. Oh, that's exactly what I was after. But the problem is it's a big circle jerk, and that layer of female approval is often used as a barrier to pretenders of the throne. It's the male equivalent of the glass ceiling. I call it the pink seal. It's kind of, they run interference for the aspirant alpha male. And what it does is it blocks off reality to a certain extent. And when you, as I said, underneath every one of his vacuous social media posts that are written by some 20-something girls, oh, if only they sort of knew what you're really like. So what we're going to do is we're going to show that real you. But the problem is what you were saying. The real you's a bit of a doofus. And you know, like, ideally New Zealand has a white guy that Māori like or a Māori guy that white folks like. And Christopher Luxon is the most un-Māori dude in the country.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And same with Seymour. You know, Seymour's not the guy you want carrying water to, you know, to tell the cuzzies that all of these little bits of law that they think are helping them out need reviewing. The people they flush the heads of down the toilet.
Exactly. And I can't, was it Fran O'Sullivan? There was one of them, and they were discussing about this coalition and talking in regards about how this is this most right wing of coalitions. And I'm thinking, what? Where did you get that from? I mean, perhaps New Zealand First is distinctly nationalist, and this Labour Party, I'm sorry, I mean, the Helen Clark government was more right-wing than this current National Party. Mm. So that Overton window has really, really just shifted.
Well, what constitutes being a good boy is changing. You know, when you've got control of the media, being a good boy means, well, we believe in climate change. We believe in the experts who are telling us vaccines work. We believe in a global order where the people who print the money decide what happens, and we gradually wrest control of democracy from people's hands. Being a good boy means believing the CIA when they say populism is the enemy of democracy. So Christopher Luxon's hitched his wagon to that. And as I said, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of confronting this, but the fact he's on record putting the boot into Trump and praising Barack Obama, who's I haven't sort of done the research to absolutely confirm it, but it seems the birth certificate was in fact a fraud, and which means that constitutionally he should never have been president. So he's hitched his wagon to that.
Mm. It is a difficult thing. I mean, in this O'Sullivan article, they're talking about the summit being held at the Park Hyatt Hotel around in terms of getting infrastructure on sort of point, because it's an issue, and they're wanting to bring get this investment back, create some stability so overseas investors will actually have confidence to start reinvesting back in New Zealand again. And they've also put out a olive branch across the aisle to the likes of Edmonds from Labour, Barbara Edmonds from Labour, to speak as well, to actually send the signal that there's cross-party support. So if, you know, the baton changes after 3 or 6 years or whenever it is, that these long-term plans will be in place. I think this is a place where Luxon, I think, will be quite comfortable using and doing what he is used to doing.
Here's the job, go do it.
Exactly. Yep. So this is sort of where he excels. But in so many of the other things that he just sort of loses, anything Māori, for example, he struggles with. I mean, one of the things she says here, overall drivers to explore investment opportunities across key sectors and forge strategic relationships that will shape the future of New Zealand's infrastructure landscape. There will be sector-specific ministerial roundtable discussions and presentations with iwi representatives highlighting the opportunities within the $80 billion Māori economy. What is the $80 billion Māori economy, Marty? Well, who funds it? Where does that money come from?
Well, I mean, you know, some of them made some real sharp decisions, but yeah, I mean, it's never been particularly voted on, has it? They don't like paying tax, or they don't have to pay tax, the lot of them, and there's very little trickle down from it to ordinary Māori, although I have heard people in that sphere say, you know, it's getting to the point where it'll come.
The trickle down, what, really? So some of the tens of millions of Waipareta will actually make it out to the people that need it?
I didn't say that.
Oh, okay, all right. I was getting optimistic there for a second.
No, you're gonna have a hard time resting the putia out of his hands.
Yeah, but that's right. I mean, look, I think there's more that's going to come on that Manurewa Marae scandal, but do I digress? Did you also have a look at the Preble in regards to that as well? Because he had a look at the Reserve Banks, because, of course, Adrian, bless his little heart, Adrian, you know, now cited that things were down, interest rates, wrestling it down to 3.75.
Yeah, that was a hospital pass from Squealer, wasn't it? Old Robertson. Old Robbo, just before the end of his term, just appointed him for another 4 years. And his, you know, his fellow travellers of tree-worshipping weirdos.
Mm. So Richard Preble actually looked at that, and one of the Massey University has got some AI, this new sort of running live AI, so it can track GDP.
A lot better than the Reserve Bank, yeah.
Yeah, in real time. Useful. Wow. And of course, it looks like they got the numbers wrong. So anyway, he reckons that their real time calculation actually had it at 3.6, not 3.75. And that, you know, that does actually make a huge difference. Now, I mean, the government, I mean, they're trying to bring things down. They're trying to take the heat out of, and I think this is what we have to remember. For all the people that get frustrated with Nicola Willis and Christopher Luxon, and I do get, you know, frustrated with David and Gareth, like everybody else. But you've got to remember that they're dealing with what they were delivered and given by Napoleon and Squealer, you know, and Chippy, and so Ardern, Hipkins and Robertson, and you know, this ain't going to be a quick fix. They managed to screw the pooch right royally, definitely in 3 years, arguably in six. It's going to take, I reckon, at least double that.
Well, it's the awful, it's, you know, and this is the first time I've said this, it's that awful time where after living it up on your credit card, you not only run out of credit, so you can't have that extra spending above your income, you've also got to start paying it back. Mm. So it's like a double whammy. And we can have a lament about the media as well. And we've sort of seen a bit of coverage about the effect of the ongoing rules of the Public Interest Journalism Fund. But all of these little clips and snips that were done and bits of funding and self-interest that really have prevented the examination and pulling apart of arguments. And also just the lack of obligation that journalists feel now to supply both sides of the story. They've kind of fallen into that. Well, what do good boys think? And good boys worry about climate change, and of course it's only humans who are making it. And you know, the reason that poor people are poor is they don't have enough money, and so on. I tell you what, I went to a parent teacher evening at my eldest daughter's school last week, and it was pretty depressing. You know, teachers doing the whole, look, the NZEA system is designed to create mediocrity. If you know, I mean, what we try and do with advanced students who are bored by it is rather than go ahead, because there's not much point in doing that, because they're just going to be stuck ahead then and get even more bored. So what we try and do is just deepen our learning a little bit. So we'll just give them some extra so they can just deepen their learning a little bit. And that's a problem. You know, and we need to re-embrace inequality. Like, whether it's my kids or not, if there's a child who's gifted at mathematics, I want that kid challenged all the way, because it's good for me if there are two math geniuses who full reach their potential in my neighborhood. And it's such a That's the kind of entrepreneurial change I'm talking about, is absent in Luxon, and it's absent in the National Party board. We're not going to get it. But yeah, you know, they if they had that, they could we could stand Luxon. But you can't have Luxon and then have his HR head as the board.
But that's because I think we've gone and deliberately created a risk-averse environment, isn't it?
Or we've
I
been able
mean,
to, because we've been safe because of fossil fuels. There's no feminism without fossil fuels.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but that's the ideologies of affluence, and we've talked about that before. So now that you've transitioned to education, we're going to bounce over a little bit because I know education is a good hobby horse for you. Did you actually see the data from America Stanford this week around the fact that shocker, the statistics, the data that she received was not correct, and that we actually have this deficit of primary school teachers, and that she's now added primary teaching as part of the fast track for immigration, and she wants to
About 3,500
import.
or something, or 1,800.
It's a significant number. I think it's something like 1,500 or 1,800.
Yeah.
So,
Hadn't
first.
counted the new jobs that had been made, hadn't counted all the people that we're bringing in who can't speak English and whose kids need to go to school.
So there's a couple of things that I'm really interested in this, and we're going to have to bounce this over to next week because I need you guys to let us know about this. So one of the things she cited was, is yes, we don't have the teachers there. So my question is that we know that there aren't necessarily more kids because we also know what in terms of the birth rates are doing. So the questions are, A, where have these teachers gone? Why, if they have left, why have they left? And if you're someone out there who is an ex-primary teacher, reach out to us, 2057 or inbox at realitycheck.radio. And keep it small, short and pithy, just six some bullet points. Let us know why you left. So why did you leave? Because of the environment? Did you leave because of the work? Did you leave because of the culture? Did you leave because of a mandate? And what, if anything, has been done to attract you back into teaching in light of the fact that we are so short of teachers? I know that there are a lot of teachers out there. I know you're there. Drop us a line and let us know, and we will have a look at those and discuss those next week. Because, you talk to a lot of teachers. You've got kids in the primary system at the moment. What's the vibe you're getting on the ground with your kids?
Well, it's either real good news, like, oh, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, yeah, you know, it's really weird. The kids, we're really seeing them coming along. And kids do come along, and, you know, by playing with other kids, they learn. But yeah, there is that that thinking that's crept into the education system with, for example, maths, and this was a program that they ran out of Massey. That whole, you know, well, kids are really good at maths and they're likely to go on and earn more money. So that's going to make inequality worse. So if we get those kids who are good at it, teach the kids who are not so good, then equity. And that's the what they're talking about with the NCEA being aimed at mediocrity. That's the long march through the institutions having reached its successful stage, where now we're at the stage where people are dumb enough to vote for Chris Hipkins in enough numbers that the little ginger ratty-eyed bastard might get back in.
Yeah. So when I spoke to Penny Marie from Let Kids Be Kids and Rodney, which was up yesterday, goes up, yesterday it went up. Now, one of the things that we ended up, one of the topics we ended up getting around to, because Rodney, of course, is presented at the board, in case you didn't see that, around the RSE education. It's taken months to get to the board.
Right, I haven't watched that yet, but it's on my to-watch list.
Yes, at Wakatipu High School. But one of the things we cycled around to was this belief that what happens at primary school or secondary school is of akin to what happened in education when we were there.
Yeah.
Okay?
Big mistake.
Big mistake. Now, you're a dad who's very active in the education of your children. So you, I know, having spent time in your household, spent time around your kids, you and your wife have got the finger on the pulse of what's going on. What are some of the things that does worry you in terms of this optimism that sometimes schools have, but also as a parent that you need to say, okay, well, the school is doing this, not enough. This is what we need to do to supplement, to make sure that our kids aren't left behind.
Yeah, I mean, reading challenging books. The main thing is something that I wish the school would really pivot toward, the education system, which is teaching children how to think. Because the schools have slipped into the what do good boys think, what do good girls think. And if you look at all those activists protesting climate change, wearing their little tea towels, you know, they're doing it, oh, good boys and girls think that, oh, good boys and girls at the same time. And so, yeah, I mean, I've been talking with my daughter just this morning. Said she didn't want to go to school because she's bored. Disconnect yourself from viewing school as the arbiter of your learning. You know, steer your own ship a lot more. We've started talking about, you know, see if you can get qualifications and, you know, to do something, you know, ridiculously early. I'm looking at with my 9-year-old son, as soon as I think he's up for it, I'm just going to go and offer him to the local garage around the corner who fix my cars and just say, yeah, get him to sweep the floor and do odd jobs. And if you're doing something interesting, teach him. And if as he's up to it, give him some hands-on stuff and pay him what you think he's worth. Because if you do that, if you're not having to pay a kid $20 an hour, you can teach them.
Yeah. It's funny you should mention that with responsibility, because my youngest, who's now the only one at home, because number one has gone off the big wide world. I know. Anywho, number two, who's in year 13 this year, one of the things he struggled with, because he's very young, he's at the young end of the scale for year 13, he struggled to find a job because they weren't just hiring kids, because he's only 16 still. And he got a job. He started a job in this last sort of month or so, and regular.
What's he doing?
Scooping ice creams. For the famous Rushman Rose here in Hawke's Bay, yeah.
They're delicious Fijoa ice creams.
They do, yeah. So he's absolutely loving it, and they're a great team there. He's really enjoying it. And the responsibility, like it's amazing. Kids thrive on having been challenged and having that responsibility. And he's now had the step up for year 13 academic. He had a great year in year 12. He's noticed the step up for year 13. He's a prefect this year. He's just been made house captain. He's got this job. And he did literally say to me, 2 days ago, he said, "Oh, Mum, this is just like, whoa." And I'm like, buckle in, buddy. Buckle in. Embrace it and buckle in. Because
scooping warm-up exercises, buddy, and get scooping. Stop moaning.
Yeah, because this is what's going to set you up. But he's actually thriving under that pressure as well, which is really encouraging to see. And I think we've actually, as parents, we've actually taken the brakes off a lot of our kids. And so, you know, so often I've said to other, I've heard other parents say, "Oh no, we don't let John or Jimmy or you know, Christy get a job because we want them to concentrate on their studies and they've just got so much going on." Well, actually, if they can get a job, that teaches them the juggle that life's busy.
Yeah.
And there's stuff, you know, stuff
going on.
Make some
money and do smart stuff with it rather than dumb stuff.
Yeah, and productivity. Now, speaking of productivity, before, because I go, gosh, I can't believe the time's getting away on us. I do want to talk about Stephen Joyce, because I see he published his David Brett how-to guide again. Don't necessarily agree with everything he had in there, but what did you definitely cover the Joyce, I'm assuming? I'm making a mess.
Yeah, I read it. I mean, yeah, he's...
He wasn't as on point as usual, but there was some interesting
things. He's basically
saying
that he's optimistic for the first time in a long time. He's saying agribusiness, you know, well, he's saying that the Reserve Bank have seemed to have finished screwing things up for now. At long last, our economy won't be so driven by the bank's interest rate decisions. With inflation now back in the band and interest rates coming down, we're entering a period where sensible investment calls can be made without an overbearing central bank casting a shadow over every single call. This is positive and should be celebrated. Second reason for positivity is the commodity cycle. We can be strangely negative about our biggest natural comparative advantage, the ability to grow quality and nutritious foods in a cost-effective way. This year, the agrarian sector is back and in a big way. Dairy and meat will be a big contributor to our economic recovery. A focus on growing tourism and international education is also positive, and our tech sector continues to grow. So it doesn't quite put those two together that, gee, labeling's really coming along in the States, and now we're not going to be able to guarantee, gee, free food. And, you know, ideally we're selling our food into those high-quality sectors of the market.
Yeah.
I mean, this... Yeah, you pointed out the other day, Radio New Zealand just finally started talking about this once the...
I know. I know. Well, so I had here for dinner on Monday night a very, very dear friend who is based in Dubai, and they have food export company. So exporting New Zealand primary produce or primary foods and to the world, predominantly the Middle East and Middle East, China and Japan. And I was dying to ask him this. So I brought up the GE thing, and he was aware of it. And I said to him, and Japan constitutes about a third of their total business. And I said to him, look, the submission period is closed on this, but this bill, as it stands, how would it affect you as an exporter of New Zealand products to the world and especially to Japan? And he just shook his head and he looked at me and he just said, Marie, I just don't get it. He said, I do not understand. I cannot figure out who benefits from this. Because he said, from my perspective, he said, this could be devastating. He said, that is the one key advantage that we have when we send food to Japan is they instantly know they do not have to worry because it is GE free.
Yeah.
He was incensed by it. And
good boys don't hold up progress by blocking science. So, yeah, why wouldn't we just take all the breaks off? You know, the other thing I didn't say about Christopher Luxon, which is, for me, the biggest worry about him, is Christopher Luxon, this is, I mean, I can tell by his actions, but I think his biggest compass is thinking about the big boy jobs he can get now he's got Prime Minister on his CV. Mm. So he's not going to do anything that's going to piss off BlackRock. And so that's why we've still got all this DEI shit. This is why we're getting the GE brakes taken off. This is why he's not going to look at getting out of Paris. All of those things are things that Larry Fink's pushed. And you know, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, has said, you know, we have to force these changes. That's what he's doing. That's why we've still got his friend who was at the Tavistock Institute.
Ducey. Mr. Ducey.
That's why we've still got New Zealand children being given hormone blockers and puberty blockers. It's not because New Zealanders want that. It's because Larry Fink wants that.
Mm.
And you know, again, if we had a media that wasn't just more government, less freedom, thinking, oh, Christopher Luxon's just, you know, trying to make things better for rich people, if they actually said, well, what sort of circles does he aspire to move in, and what impact does that have? Because they've been stupid enough not to realize that all of the stuff that they're cheering on as left-wing, more government, less freedom folks is coming from the richest people in the world. Then it doesn't quite square that circle.
Yeah, yeah. And now, before we go to mailbag, because we have actually got a lot of mail this week, the one last story that I do want to touch on, which was in the Bites yesterday as they went out, today as we were recording this, was around the three that left from the COVID inquiry. Now, there may be another report that has gone out since time of recording. However, at that stage, very little has gone out. So two legal plus one of the sort of team leaders has gone. Everyone's been really cagey about this. And I'll get the quote from the Bites this morning. Now, if you do not get the Bites, if you're wondering what I'm talking about, the RCR Bites is something that we send out to Foundation Members Club people. So that's those who sign up for a monthly contribution that really helps us hugely, because we are funded by you, for you. Unlike a certain rumour that's floating around on X, we're not funded by the Atlas Network. In fact, I still don't even really know who those people are, but we are fully funded by you, by the listeners, by the good old people of New Zealand. Now, the Bites is something that you get if you sign up for the Foundation Members Club. There is actually a free trial. Jump onto the website, check that out, and you can actually test that out for yourself. I love the Bites. It gives you a little sort of snapshot from an email from a Red point of view of some of the news for that day. And then we follow it up at midday with the Daily Brief, which, of course, Marty contributed to, I contributed to yesterday. And that is sort of a quick little sort of anywhere between 8 to 15 minute snapshot in audio form of what's going on. Now, the story here is these top resignations. The executive director and two legal counsels of the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the COVID response have resigned. Those who have resigned are Helen Potiki, Kirsty MacDonald KC and Nick Whittington. At the time of writing, the resignations had not yet been publicly announced. It's understood they've resigned due to concerns about how the inquiry was being run. Well, that can go in any direction, can't it, Marty?
Yeah, it was pretty opaque, wasn't it? I found it really difficult to get to the bottom of that one by reading the article. I was none the wiser, actually. But no. Seeing that Ms. Potiki had been involved with the Ministry for Women and various other woke ministries. So, I mean,
yeah, it will be interesting to see what comes of this. So, of course, Stuff then turned around at the bottom of that article and had a wee survey on there, which was, do you think the COVID second part of the COVID inquiry should actually take place? Yes, no, or unsure. Last time I looked at it, it was 2-1 on the yes camp. So it's certainly something that I think Kiwis want. This is definitely a watch this space thing. I do wonder, because of course submissions are now starting to come in. They don't close until April. And I think that now that we have this expanded scope on this commission, there are going to be stories and effects from New Zealanders that now can be heard with that expanded scope. Whereas up until now, people within governance and media, especially Paula Penfold, looking at you, have had their fingers in their ears and just have gone, misinformation, because it's just been too hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a big volume of disgruntlement and anger building up behind the dam of legacy media. You know, I saw the other day News Talk ZB had their obligatory all the Antarctica, this Antarctic ice sheet melting could have a major effect on New Zealand's weather, and it had something like 150 laugh emojis, and that was it. And it's just like that under Christopher Luxon's, as I said, vacuous social media posts by 20-something chicks, you know, to humanize them. Everyone's just like, dude, what are you doing? And there's never any reply or engagement. It's all, and yeah, so I think people are increasingly understanding. It's not just that we've got a difference of opinion from legacy media. They are cynically holding back the public will because, as I said, the CIA came to realize once after Brexit, populism is the enemy of democracy, which is, you know, like destroying the village to save the village. And, you know, another thing that I think is worth mentioning was in Stephen Joyce's article was that he was talking about our public company sector is also only partway through a rethink of what it is about. And this goes back to what I was saying about Christopher Luxon. The current pretty dismal reporting season is in large part a reflection of the long recession we have been in, but there are also too many well-reported cases of poor governance amongst our largest companies and the National Party. Didn't say that, I added that bit. We need a move from tick box administrators to a more entrepreneurial culture in our listed company boardrooms if we are to really release the animal spirits of growth and a higher wage economy again. Now, I don't know if Stephen Joyce thought about the National Party board when he said that, but I'll read it again and substitute that. We need a move from tick box administrators in the National Party board to a more entrepreneurial culture if we are to really release the animal spirits of growth and a higher wage economy again. Those guys have got to go.
They've got to unleash
It's
their
their
inner
fault.
animal.
Unleash those animal spirits. And you know, it's quite interesting. If you go to the National Party website, they've got their names. They've got photos of them. There's no information about them at all. It's like they think explaining is losing. Maybe they're embarrassed about them, and they should be a little bit.
So, did you catch Paul Brennan's interview with Rob McCullough?
No, I didn't. I missed it.
Oh my gosh, Marty. When you're out walking the diggings, you put that
Yeah.
one on. Oh
All
my
right.
gosh. And again, I know I've mentioned this a couple of times if you've been on the webinars, but that interview was absolutely brilliant. And I mean, Rob is our favourite irascible professor. Both of us are very, very fond of his thoughts. He's a professor of macroeconomics. He sees the bigger picture. He sees it. And it was literally truth bomb after truth bomb. And one of the things he was scathing about was basically the merry-go-round of the same old people doing the same old things. And all they're doing is changing seats and putting different hats on. And there's no fresh thinking, there's no ideas. You've got the approved list of experts that they just continue to go to. And if Nicola Willis needs a fresh idea, instead of doing exactly what you said, releasing that animal spirit and finding somebody new, no, they go back to the tired old commentators again and again and again.
The problem isn't that we've got people like that just populating all of our boards. The problem is that there's a process to eliminate independent thinkers. And we've got to get comfortable with that again. And you know, it's just like the news. I mean, we at RCR aren't for a minute saying, hey, we don't want any reporting of the benefits of fluoride, or we don't want any reporting that COVID vaccines, you know, are safe and effective. It's like, yeah, let's have that, but let's balance it out with some
Facts.
counter facts.
Now but, we're going to go to mailbag because thank you for everyone that sent us this mail this
yeah,
week.
No, it's been awesome.
And I'm just doing the mailbag stuff because we had a whole heap of engagement on social media. I know particularly Marty's Daily Brief has had a huge amount of feedback on it. Tamahiri, this is from the text machine from Kingsley. Tamahiri is in the sights. Let's hope police and the judicial system are up to the task. Election fraud, treason, questions value of the Māori seats. And he goes on to say New Zealand desperately needs a strong leader. Well, Kingsley, we're on point for you today. Someone to stand up and pass laws to abolish all race-based avenues of representation, abolish Māori electorates and local wards, and make it illegal to appoint people to councils on the basis of race. Equality of suffrage once and for all. No race, gender and religious use to define or divide. Well, you'll get no arguments from me there, Kingsley. And actually, when you look at MMP, currently, I mean, as much as I am not fond of Te Pāti Māori, they are currently polling you don't need the Māori seats anymore based on what they're polling. So, you know, why? Mm. Why? From Alan, hi team, was listening to Marie's interview about the above dude. Who's the above dude? Oh, Simon Anderson, very good. Did a quick Google search and all I could was find a post claiming that the dude, as in he was talking about Mātua Kahurangi.
Right.
Have you been following him? Yeah, on X. Was AI made up and fake? Is he actually for real? Really hard to know in this day and age what is real and what is not. Crazy world. Alan. Yeah, and I can... So Simon is one of the few people who has actually spoken to the real life person behind Mātua Kahurangi. So it's
sounds
very
like a
Māori much real.
Dude, middle-aged Māori dude.
Yeah, middle-aged Māori dude is, yeah, exactly. From Lynette, hi Marie, enjoyed your interview with Simon Anderson, Re Brian Tamaki and the rest. Good to see, have that insight and perspective. Great job. Thanks, Lynette. Marie, so clever, just love Kiwi Farm. Keep us up to date. Thank you. And that's from another Marie. So you're welcome. And I'm sorry, I apologise to everybody, Kiwi Farm's late this week because I sort of...
You're just warming your singing voice up again?
No. There's going to be no singing this week. I've shot my bolt on that. But you know how the stuff's unfolding? And so all I'm going to say is Jonesy has seen Dragon Boats. So that's this week. Hey, Marie and Marty, this Saturday morning, I've just finished getting my M&M fix for the week. You guys rock. It couldn't have been happier to have you back for 2025. Keep up the huge work. Huge appreciations from Beth and a big kiss. Thanks, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Hi Marie, your show seems to be my fave and it's sobering to hear Simon Anderson put into words so exactly how I feel about the political scene so eloquently. Keep up the good work and my sanity needs saving. You're most welcome. Did you listen to the Simon Anderson? Have you had a chance? You probably haven't.
Yeah, I really like Simon Anderson.
Yeah, Simon's great.
He's exactly the kind of voice that wouldn't normally make it into mainstream media who needs to be there.
Yeah,
slightly oppositional character, you know, a little bit outside Overton's window. Great.
No,
good interview.
It's great. Hi there, dear Marie and Marty. I thought I'd better drum up some feedback and maybe a compliment for Marty just to keep him going. Anyway, I really enjoyed listening to last week's Media Matters. It's slightly weird watching both of you after listening for so long. So many topics lately, but I wrote notes so I'd remember my thoughts. Your comments about Christopher Luxon and his underwhelming media team. I just wondered if they were actually trying to make him look bad. It does look that way at times. Also, the topic of the Public Interest Journalism Fund. Was it ever actually publicly stated that what the terms were? Yes, it was.
No,
but you had to, well, wasn't it?
I think it came out on a...
OIA.
Didn't it come out on an OIA?
Oh, it could have, actually. I definitely know you had to look for it. It wasn't easily found.
The media weren't going to say, hey, look, we sold out. We took our 30 pieces of silver and... yeah, we're pretty much Pravda now.
Yeah. Thank goodness for Mātua Winston. Anyway, obey treaty principles and reporting, et cetera, all get fined. So interesting. More on that would be interesting. And a compliment for Marty. I thought your Monday today lunchtime news roundup on Christopher Luxon was spot on. Hopefully his media team were listening and can pass on a few tips. Awesome. Thanks and great listening to you too. Have a great week from Jackie B in the team Hawke's Bay.
Thanks, Jackie.
And I think that's everything. that we've got. So thank you, everyone that sent in feedback. 2057 is the text, and inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email. And as I said before, teachers, we want to hear from you. If you're a primary teacher, especially not currently working in teaching, flick us through a text or an email with some quick bullet points of why you're not there. As I said before, why did you leave? Was it culture? Was it mandate? Was it you just had enough? And would you go back, or has any overtures been made to you to come
and
back?
I know you said keep it brief, but the other question would be, you know, what would you change? What needs to change to make it more effective and more in harmony with the zeitgeist.
Yep, indeed. So 2057 is the text. Inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email. And I will be back tonight with 360 at 8 o'clock with Alistair. And we're talking about trust in the media. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be an absolute banger.
Awesome.
Right. Thank you, Marty. That's us for another week.
Yeah, we're getting busy, huh?
We are.
So I've got... I've got the Fourth Estate tomorrow, which will be...
Whoa, who have you got on?
I think Annie O'Brien and Peter Williams at this stage. So that's going to be great. So I'm just putting, once I finish this, we'll start putting the work into that. And
So, and I was just going to say, Annie has been absolutely zinging this week. She certainly has. I will be listening and watching that. Are you audio only, or are you going to do video as well?
No, I think it's video. Annie does these deep dives, which are fantastic. Yeah. And again, it's just like, wow, man, it would be good if she was actually in the media doing that with some of the resources that are going into making this other vacuous crap. She did a really interesting deep dive into the Atlas Foundation. And that was really interesting. And, you know, it tied with that thing I'm often saying, where the reason people keep going back to Marxism is because capitalism hasn't come up with a good set of consolation prize for the people who don't thrive in it. Mm. Now, a thought that occurred to me with that was maybe the Atlas Foundation was getting a little bit close to that, because when you actually look at it outside the more government, less freedom bogeyman portrayal of it, they're pretty benevolent organization. It's almost like they're working on a consolation prize for those left behind by capitalism. And I think maybe the left know that if the right locks that down, it's all over for the Marxist student politicians.
Indeed. And I'll be intrigued too. I know she also did a deep dive this last week as well around science funding that was cut, and actually some of the programs that were cut within that science funding, which weren't very sciencey.
Yeah, no, good. I enjoy all my guests on the Fourth Estate. They're, we're really privileged to have some learned people on it. So, look forward to that.
Oh, well, that's been Media Matters for another week. We'll be here again next week. Thank you, Marty. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to us here at RCR Talk.
Adios, amiga. Have a great week, everyone.
We will. See you later.